My message today is the second part of a series that I'm doing entitled Poverty, Charity, and Justice. So here's the thing about poverty. Poverty isn't the result of the world having too little resources. The reality is that there is more than enough for everyone. Everyone can experience love and the abundance of creation without anyone lacking. And I mean, who would really have a problem with that? Well, considering the immense differences in people's access to basic human needs, I say that there must be some pretty powerful people who have a pretty big problem with it. There's plenty for all of us, but all of us do not have plenty. Some people are forced to watch their children struggle to fall asleep in spite of their stomachs grumbling from hunger, to watch their parents needlessly pass away because of a lack of adequate health care, or to beg for money from strangers because while you can't afford the proper treatment, you just can't stand the thought of going much longer without another drink. At the last church that I served at, we started something that we called the Sandwich Brigade. Now, it was a pretty simple idea. There are people on street corners who are asking for money for food. And most people can be hesitant to give them any money because, you know, we imagine that they might buy liquor or drugs or some other things that some folks don't think they should have, like cell phones. And I've actually heard that over and over again. They shouldn't have a cell phone. They're poor. They shouldn't have one. We, on the other hand, see ourselves as responsible enough to handle a drink from time to time or have a cell phone. We are not only hesitant to give them money, but we're also hesitant at times to even make eye contact. Now, maybe it's from our guilt. Maybe it's a psychological resistance to having to acknowledge that the world is so messed up that people are reduced to the point that their best option is to beg money from strangers. Maybe it's something altogether different. Whatever it is, most people treat them like they are invisible at best and inexcusable at worst. Now, the Sandwich Brigade hit corners with bagged lunches. Frequently, we would, in the winter in particular, we'd include hot soup or something like that. And we brought meals to them. We spent time with them. We heard their stories, gave them information about how to get in touch with us for different kinds of help. And more times than not, we'd receive a pretty big hug before we headed off to the next corner. That's how I met a friend that I'm going to call Wayne. Wayne had an alcohol problem. The first time that I met him, he wouldn't take a bag of food from me until he knew he had an alcohol problem. With permission, he would sleep on the steps of a local church. He lost his job, his family, the life he'd always dreamed of, because of his drinking problem. And by the time he realized that he actually had a problem, he had bigger problems. He had lost everything that mattered to him and was living off in a state some 1,400 miles from his home. And once he realized what had happened and he tried to get back on his feet and return to his family to prove to them that he was a changed man, well, it had been too little. Wayne was an articulate, thoughtful, intelligent man with a very pleasant and engaging personality. And when I met him, he had been on the streets for 13 years. And he still managed to be well-groomed, well-dressed, but he couldn't beat his drinking problem. Even if he could overcome the reluctance of employers to hire someone who didn't have an address, not to mention the problem of what to do with what very little he owned while he was at work, his drinking problem made it hard to get a job as well. And here's the thing. He really needed a job so that he could afford to get the help he needed with his drinking problem. It's part of the nasty circular nature of poverty and the system in which it resides. It is it's fair to say that Wayne and the tens of millions, yes, tens of millions of people that the U.S. Census estimates live in poverty don't experience life as abundantly as everyone should. Unlike Wayne, they might not all currently have the skills to provide themselves with basic needs, even if they were given the opportunity, but the majority of them do, and the majority that are left would be more than willing to learn. The problem isn't with people, not with the people. The problem is with the system. There is plenty for everyone. There's just a reluctance by some to share it. Gandhi put it much more succinctly, saying there's not enough on this planet for everyone's needs, but not enough for there is enough for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. Last week I shared a little about my struggles in grad school at Wake Forest Divinity School. Now I'm going to go back 10 years before that when I was taking my first graduate level classes. Having grown up Southern Baptist, I was in my traditional back row seat. And out of nowhere, my right eye started twitching. And it wouldn't stop. And it wasn't long before it was driving me a little bit mad. It wasn't only slightly physically uncomfortable, but it became socially uncomfortable. Trust me, you don't want a complete stranger thinking you're winking at them constantly, particularly like in public bathrooms. Very awkward. Now, after a few days of my eye twitching and some encouragement from my friends who had grown more than slightly annoyed at my constant winking, I pushed aside my vanity and paid a visit to the local optometrist. Turns out my twitching was simply my eye working really hard to try to keep a focus and the muscles getting tired and starting twitching. A few hours later, I left the office with a new pair of glasses and a promise that my twitching eye would stop. The twitching did stop, but as far as I was concerned, the most remarkable thing that happened was that what happened when I walked outside wearing my glasses. I could actually see the leaves on the trees. I know that doesn't really seem like a big thing, but for me, it was a bit remarkable. I guess I had just so slowly lost my 20/20 vision that I didn't realize that you were supposed to actually be able to see the individual leaves on a tree. To me, they were just sort of supposed to look like a blur of green. It's just what trees look like. I sometimes wonder if most of us might need a new pair of glasses with which to see the realities of poverty in America. We've become too comfortable with what we see and don't seem to recognize that it should be different. Poverty in the U.S. is real. It's all too real. It's more real than most of us know, or at least want to see fully. In one of the world's wealthiest nations, more than 60% of people, will experience some form of poverty before they turn 65. 60%. That's up 10% from a decade ago. That means at any given point in time, a little over 1 in 10 people in the U.S. live in poverty at any given point in time. 1 in 10. Now, contrary to what those who call social programs socialist, which is mostly code for un-American, contrary to what they believe, the majority of the poor in the U.S. are not poor because they are lazy and unmotivated. Approximately four out of five low-income families have at least one family member who has a job. The truth is, at least subconsciously, we want to see poverty with a little less clarity than that. We'd rather believe that it's just about the few people we see on street corners. If we see it any clearer, we'd have to admit that the lady down the road with two kids who works a full-time minimum wage job makes just $15,080 a year before taxes. That's a number that is well below the poverty level for a family of three. She probably struggles to put food on the table, to pay for heat during the winter, and to make the rent every month. Those two kids, we got to pray that they never get sick, ever. Because the $580 she makes every 2 weeks, again before taxes, won't even begin to pay for their health care. We could probably not only use a new pair of glasses in seeing more clearly the realities of the issues of poverty in the U.S., but also in seeing the reality of what it's going to take to fix it. It will take nothing short of a revolution. We begin by not only giving those in need a hand out if they need it, but by giving them a hand up because they need it. That's the question of charity versus justice. Charity temporarily fixes people so that systems seem to work better. Justice permanently fixes systems so that all people have a real opportunity to do better. Or as Desmond Tutu put it, there comes a point where we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they are falling in. You see, love is not complete when it is temporary. You do not share complete love when you give a dollar to the guy on the street corner. It's a beginning, but it's just a beginning. Love begins to extend past the temporary and into the future when, as you hand him that dollar, you ask him his name. You find out how he got here. You listen to him. You don't judge him. You recognize that he wouldn't be here if he had a better choice. And then, from his story, you learn how the system in which we live, how those systems are perfectly designed to receive the results that we have, perfectly designed to let some snack on caviar while others scrounge for scraps, perfectly designed to let some jet around the country while others sleep under bridges, perfectly designed to let some fall into money and others fall into poverty. You see that, and then you set yourself to changing the systems. You do charity because you must. You do charity because it changes a life for a moment. But you do not stop there. You become an instigator of the mighty waters of justice. You demand justice because from your place in life you can. You demand justice because it changes lives forever. You add your voice and your energy to the ever-flowing stream of justice because you are not willing to set idly by as systems and the powerful marginalize people into poverty in the midst of the world's abundance. You go upstream to find out why people are falling in and system to change. Next week, we're going to take a look at what specifically that kind of justice looks like. So I hope that you will be here for the conclusion and remind you. Are there those who have any thoughts that they'd like to share about the subject today or the message? Got a few here.
Thank you, Mark, for your next installment in this cliffhanger. So next week you're going to tell the assembled multitudes. Those of you who weren't here the last 2 weeks,
you're out of luck.
Yeah. But again, I think you're telling us that the poverty is a feature, not a bug, in the system.
Absolutely.
So you're
have been intended that way originally, but over time, there's been changes made that have made it a feature for sure.
Well, I mean,
designed to get the results they get.
I mean, it seems to me I've heard some people say, "Well, you know, the Bible says the poor will always be with us. So, what's your problem?"
Yeah, that's a cherry picking a specific verse that Jesus said and taking it completely out of context. But you're right. We had a couple back here.
In your research, are there countries that don't have poverty? Like, does Denmark not have?
Those countries that handle poverty better, that do help folks who find themselves in that space and have programs specifically designed to help them, and they're not littered with all of the pitfalls and mountains that we have put into ours. So it's there are countries who have done it fairly well. Does that mean that there's no one living in poverty? Poverty's relative.
Right.
But certainly the folks that they would consider are living in poverty don't look anything like the 1 in 10 that we have in America.
Right. So it seems like historically there's often been poverty, that it's been a part of many cultures
there always is poverty, but it doesn't excuse us for making it hard to not be
right.
That feedback loop that you can't get out of because there's so many obstacles.
Right. No, in America, poverty makes a lot of people rich.
Oh yes, it does.
I've seen that. Personally with my son, that being poor, you make a lot of other people lot of money.
Very rich, yeah. Right next to you.
I'm a little scared to speak up and say this, but I'm going to say it, because if I didn't, I would be, well, let me just say it. If it were not for my father, if I was lucky, I would be someone on the side of the street, probably asking for money. More likely, I would not be alive. I live on disability. That is partially due to a seizure disorder. It is also partially due to mental health issues, and I don't share that very often. But the simple fact that I don't share that very often is going to go against what I'm about to say. We treat mental health issues and alcoholism and drug addiction are mental health diseases, no different from cancer or any other disease. But we treat them differently. We treat the people differently, etc. You talk about not making eye contact. Even. I mean, I, especially as a female, walking alone, if there's someone just talking to themselves walking down the street, I may very well cross the street, and that's hypocritical. I don't have schizophrenia, so... and then, we hear about police being called out of concern for these people. Then these people are afraid of the police. We don't know what they're seeing. They might be seeing a monster's face. They resist and have died.
Sure.
As far as disability is concerned, I was quite young when I first was put on disability, and had made some very serious attempts on my life, and very serious, and had turned to drugs and alcohol, mostly drugs, for help with that.
Mm-hmm.
Help with just keeping things at bay.
Right.
Getting through the day. And I'm fortunate enough that, it has been almost 15 years since that has been, the way I've coped. However, disability thinks that you should be able to live, or that I should be able to live on $600 a month. And sure, I do things on the side to try to make a little bit of money, etc. And even that money, good luck getting disability for a mental health issue or for anything without a highly paid lawyer, unless basically you don't have legs or something. Had it not been for my father, I would not have had that lawyer. I would not have that money.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a broken system. I don't know the answer for it. Yes, there are free services out there for people, but they pale in comparison to the ones that are not free, unfortunately.
Sure.
However, just being here and being a part of this community is one of the most stabilizing and highlighting things of my life at this point.
Thanks for that.
So,
thank you.
I'm
glad
to be here.
Thank you for sharing that. Are there others? If not, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay.